think that today is just to give you an insight into what's in the document, because we respect the fact that you may need to spend time understanding what does the audit directive, among other things, mean. What is it that it attempts to do, and how does it enable us to do the work that we do with the level of independence required? We're also going to talk about the audit tariffs, and these are the rates that we develop in the office in order to generate the fees that we charge to all the institutions that we audit. So there are three elements to what we're going to be dealing with today. As I said, the strategic plan, the audit tariffs, and the audit directive. Just for confirmation before I move into the detail, do we all have copies of those three documents for purposes of today's engagement? All right, with that confirmed, just at the outset, Chair, when we looked at our planning for the 2012 year, which we are presenting in front of the committee today, we also took stock of what exactly characterizes our environment in the audit office as we speak now. And the large portion of the stuff that has been highlighted in our organizational environment is exactly the issues that we reported on when we reported in our annual report for the year that ended March 2011. Clearly, I think we made a statement there that over the 4 years that we have commenced work around the strategic plan, we believe that we are firmly positioned as an audit office to be an important player in the area of public audit in South Africa. A number of achievements have also been recorded, among which are the maturing processes within our office to do detailed analysis of our audit outcomes. And that process has matured. Every year we do it, we build on to the previous year. Yesterday we were meant to be sharing the outcome of that analysis of the root causes of our audit outcomes, but we will have another opportunity to present that to Parliament. There must have been some glitches in the programming in Parliament, but it was meant to have happened yesterday. So there's evidence to the fact that you know, the tools of analysis that we use as an audit office, where we highlight the very root causes that cause qualifications in the system, is a process in our environment that has matured. And in this strategic plan document, we are also going to elevate it with a view to making sure that we build our tools of analysis so that as institutions that we audit focus on building a strong culture of financial management, we are there to support and provide them the necessary insights. And also, I think the role that is played by our leadership in the organization, as if one looks at the second goal that we have committed to as an office, that of visibility of our leadership. We have made strides over a period of time to make sure that our leadership becomes visible to the executive, to oversight, and I'm sure many of us have noticed and observed a number of them taking part in some of the portfolio committee directions, which were dealing with the annual reports of the various departments. We also have a program that we have initiated on a quarterly basis where we review and follow up on the key controls that we believe are necessary to eliminate qualifications in general in the institutions of government. From a talent management point of view, we've also, I think, over the last 4 or 5 years, made significant strides in developing and retaining talent within our office, because we believe that it is the retention of talent that will get us over the period of time to institutionalize our achievements as well as to better our approach to doing auditing. Rather than having to go out and recruit every year, we think that a huge investment to build strong auditing talent in the institution. It's also clear that over the years since we started operating, we have been having a number of deficits in the office, to the extent that our ability to reinvest in the infrastructure that we need to continue to deliver on our mandate has taken a backseat because of the financial deficits, but we are now in a position where second year since the adoption of the funding model, we've now been able to record positive surpluses, at least for the 2011 as well as the 2009-2010 financial year. One of the very important elements of what I believe is a key pillar of what we do as an office is our ability to be an exemplary institution within the area of public administration and governance. And the strong elements of that are still intact, in the sense that when it comes to issues of ethical conduct, when it comes to issues of quality of the deliverables that we provide, as well as when it comes to adherence to some of the prescribed codes on transformation and broad-based led economic empowerment, the office is still committed to those achievements. Just as I said earlier on, if one looks at the objectives and the goals that have been set by a number of government institutions towards achieving clean audits, we are still committed to assisting them. And as I said earlier on, our assistance to them is predominantly around providing the analysis that they might need to understand where they go wrong, as well as to make our people available to explain to them should their need arise. On the international front, we certainly still play a role there. As members will be aware, it is our last year, I think, that we will be involved in the audit of the United Nations, having started that in 2000 or 1999 thereabouts, and that mandate is going to be coming to an end. But there's another area of work that we are involved on the international front, which is the International Organization of Supreme Audit Institutions, which our Auditor General is currently the president. And so there is still some level of involvement, but this involvement on the international front does not in any way dilute our primary focus, which is the reporting and the auditing of public institutions in South Africa. We do this because it provides our people an additional area of exposure and experience. And it also is one of those that becomes a method of talent magnet, if you like, whereby we are able to attract people because there's an opportunity for them to work beyond our shores. One issue that we highlighted in our annual report, and we continue to raise it also in the strategic plan that we are presenting, is the tough economic environment that we are facing and still moving into, which has got a direct impact on our ability to collect our audit fees, because particularly in municipalities, if municipalities are struggling to collect their own fees because of these economic conditions we're in, we are also affected directly by that. And members will appreciate that this matter has been on our agenda for quite some time, and I think it's going to continue to be on our agenda, and it's one of those things that we'd like to flag to make sure that it doesn't fall off the radar. Our ability to collect fees that enable us to deliver on these commitments. If I move then into the key areas that that we're committing to in this strategic plan, there's always been five goals that the Auditor General has committed to, as we have them here on the board. The very first one, as I said at the beginning, is the area of mobilizing all our people to ensure that when they write our reports, when they communicate the reports that we produce as an audit office, we try and be sensitive to the fact that there's a wide range of constituencies that are interested in the work that we do, as well as the reports that we write. So we always encourage all our people to ensure that that which we produce is a report that must be made simple, must at least provide clarity, and must be relevant to the needs and the challenges of public financial management and governance. We still are committed to that goal. It's one of those commitments that we make, and we will continue to do this as well in this next year of the strategic plan. The leadership at the audit office is a second goal that we're committing to. The strengthening of our organizational human resources, this is all about providing our own people, developing them, training and investing in their development so that they can become expert auditors in the public sector. Funding is another goal because we believe that what we do costs money and institutions have to pay for it. And we want to commit to the fact that we want to make sure that this is sustainable. We do not charge fees that are in excess of what departments and municipalities can afford. But at the same time, linked to this, we also would like to believe that what we provide as a service carries value and therefore ought to be paid for. And lastly, the other goal among the five is the one on leading by example. We would want to continue to be exemplary as an audit office, and how we test that among others is that when we ourselves get subjected to the audit process, we want to be the last people to be found wanting. Because should that be the case, then it will be difficult for us to preach the gospel as we do under the fair code. So there's a direct link to some of these goals in terms of how they relate to each other. Hence, we package them like this so that we can have a look at them and deal with them individually, but at the same time identify the fact that there's a very close connection between them. Contained in this year's strategic plan, if I go through some of the level of detail, which members will also pick up in the main document. As I said, the highlight on our key controls is one of the things that we have developed firmly, and we believe that it requires to be grown, because in 2 or 3 years' time, there is going to be an assessment of how institutions that we audit have fared in respect of their audit outcomes come 2014. And so we do not want to take the foot off the accelerator so far as providing simple, clear, and relevant reports, because these are the ingredients that institutions and departments will need to use in order to continue to do their oversight work over the institutions that we audit. There has been quite a clear level of proactive leadership on our side, where we send our teams on a quarterly basis to meet with departments, as well to evaluate with those departments what level of progress have they made in respect of the commitments that they make every year. We go around the country every year, we have the general report roadshows, and we meet with various stakeholders, whether it is the executive or in the oversight. Commitments get made all the time. And what we've committed ourselves is to say we will follow up on a quarterly basis to make sure that we can assess whether you are indeed making progress in the area of addressing audit issues that have been previously raised. So we continue on this path because we believe that most institutions previously were used to seeing auditors at the beginning of the audit cycle only, and the next time they see them is when they come and collect the fees, and so we want to make sure that our interaction with the institutions is more qualitative, in the sense that it talks to the issues that are a priority in terms of fixing government accounting and financial management. We also have other sections in the office which also fall within this goal, and those are the specialized service lines that we have in the office. If I think about them, it will be the likes of performance auditing, the likes of investigations and information systems audit. What we're saying in this strategic plan is that there is a need for us to strengthen the level of integration of the findings that are coming out from those other areas of work that we do. If, for example, we have done performance auditing on infrastructure delivery, in the form of the report that we have recently tabled in Parliament, we want to make sure that the findings that are coming out of that performance audit do not get forgotten when we plan the regularity audits, because those issues that we pick up in the performance audit are also indicative of the challenges that need to be addressed when it comes to the regularity or financial audits. So that's one of the key issues in terms of the key initiatives that we are going to be embarking upon, Chair. Certainly the area of reporting against predetermined objectives. If one looks at our general report, which members will have an opportunity to pick up or have also picked it up in other engagements of the annual reports and other committees, is the huge emphasis that we are putting on reporting against predetermined objectives. Because our focus is not so much limited only to financial management. We also want to get a sense of, is there proper reporting against the objectives that have been set up front? So that if we said there is going to be delivery of 10 houses in human settlements, we want to check how do they go about reporting on that in their annual report. And there's been a number of challenges, and we are committing ourselves in this area to intensify the focus on performance, on reporting against predetermined objectives. The area of performance auditing, there's been an interest across the sector in government to intensify the focus around performance auditing, which is really an assessment of the triple E's, as we call them, whether the resources have been spent economically, whether there has been an efficient utilization of resources towards achieving the objectives, and whether there has been an effective achievement of what was intended. Those are the three areas that we will be looking at in our performance auditing. At this stage, we are encouraging our performance audit unit in the organization to give full attention to the area of research, to make sure that when we go into an area that we have not previously dealt with, we want to make sure that the research that we do will support it, even if it's an area in education. If, for example, we want to do performance audit on the learner transport scheme or on feeding scheme, as it were, within the area of education, we don't want to charge ahead and do that without understanding the full extent of how all of this is being put together. So the priority we're giving in this strategic plan is that we are going to be spending quite a lot of time developing our internal capacity, because we believe that a combination of performance auditing and the financial or regularity audits that we have become accustomed to is going to help in understanding what exactly is happening to the monies that are being appropriated to the various functions in government. As you can see in the last bullet, we have already identified certain things that we are going to be paying attention to. I spoke specifically earlier about the one on infrastructure. There's a report that's already tabled in that regard. And there's a number of other performance audits that are already underway. We had embarked on one, for example, on the area of education, the one on the use of consultants in government. And our assessment and evaluation of that one is really to get an understanding of to what extent is there an efficient and effective utilization of consulting services. We are not moving from the premise that there should be no consulting services, but we want to assess if there's a person that, as an example, has been employed in a department as a chief financial officer, and they've got all the minimum level of technical training and competence that's required to do that job. We move from the basis that, from the premise that if you've got a person like that and there's no vacancy, what is it that motivates for that particular chief financial officer to seek the services of an outside consultant to prepare financial statements, as an example? So that is the real focus that we're giving to this area of consulting, so that we don't throw cold water at it, but we want to assess whether this is being utilized properly without attracting waste of resources. On the simplicity, that is, among others, the key initiatives. We also have taken on board internally a more focused assessment of the key transversal risks that are in place across government. If one looks at the area of supply chain, for example, it will be one of those areas. And that initiative is an internal initiative in the office to say, let us, as the leader leadership in the office identify what we consider to be the transversal risks proactively within the entire system where we audit, so that we can provide all our teams right across the country with a very clear view of how these risks are translating themselves in the environment and what needs to be done to respond to these risks through the process of an audit. A lot of these are also carried in our general reports, because the general reports that we produce and table in Parliament are a reservoir of our insights that we picked up in the audits. It also articulates the conversations and commitments that have taken place with the direct executive leadership, as well as oversight in portfolio committees and all of that. So there is certainly a need for us to make sure that our risk-based approach to auditing continues to grow, so that we do not audit because we listened to a particular program on radio. We want to audit because we understood intimately the operations that are taking place within a particular. And that's why we do this upfront, so that we are not auditing to some noise. We want to audit to stuff that is tangible within the system of government. ICT controls has also been identified as one key area, because there's a huge focus and a huge investment in the area of technology. Technology being an enabler and a tool to provide the services that government provides. One of the key issues for us as auditors, when we look at the information and communication technology controls, is the fact that if the controls in the information technology environment are weak, the chances are that somebody who wants to interfere with supply chain management or who wants to approve expenditures inappropriately, they can find it easy to go into a system that is not properly controlled and effect transactions, and people who will be overseeing those transactions will probably pick it up many months after it has happened. And so we believe that the weakness in the systems of information control in government is one focus area that we're also going to be paying attention to. And in our general report, the most recent one that we had issued, we have spoken at length and reported at length on the nature of the control weaknesses that are there in the ICT environment. So part of what we are budgeting for in this strategic plan is to ensure that we build our capacity and provide state-of-the-art intervention insofar as information systems controls are concerned. One of the things that members will see as we go around the country in our roadshows on the general reports is the prevalence of weaknesses within the supply chain management environment and in other areas of human resource control and so on. And we want to also, in our audit procedures that we are going to be putting in our delivery of these audits, make sure that we do proper fraud risk assessments to make sure that any transactions that are susceptible to the area of potential fraud, we make sure that we develop procedures to address them. An example of this, for example, could be that if we look at the database of people who are getting paid social grants, as an example, within the area of SASSA. If we look at the database on the system of SASSA and we see that in the database of people who are, let's say, 65 years and older, who are getting old age pension, part of this fraud risk assessment is using tools that analyze the data on the system to make inquiries like the frequency of the changing of bank accounts, as an example. If you go into an information systems environment and you've got a population of 65 and older who are being paid social grants, and if you interrogate that data and you find that there have been a frequent change of bank accounts, we want to ask ourselves the question, what triggers a 65-year and older to change their bank account when they are getting a social grant? Because it could be that it is some of these weaknesses in the system that never get identified upfront, where somebody could know of an old person who has passed on and decide that they are going to replace that person's bank account with their own. Because if the system's weaknesses are not being addressed from an IT control, it will be easy for people to do things like that. So that's what we are trying as an office to strengthen all the tools that will ensure that when we issue an audit report, we at least have had an opportunity to address most of the issues that potentially could attract attention. And as we do what we do in respect of this goal, we are also saying to the members of the committee, we use a scale of 1 to 4 in assessing whether we are achieving the goals that we set ourselves. So as far as the goal 1 is concerned, we are saying that when we measure whether we have achieved what we have, what we had set out to achieve in terms of these initiatives that I've dealt with, we are committing on a scale of 1 to 4. We are committing to 3. Because we know there will be areas where we will fall short, so we don't want to commit to achieving everything, because then when the rubber hits the road, come the 1st of April 2012, it will be evident that we will probably not be able to do justice to everything that we're committing to. So when we report then on the strategic plan, you will see, based on the commitment that we're making, whether we have achieved a 3 or... And these goals that we are setting in terms of the quantitative achievement will be independently tested by our auditors. So every year when we issue our audit report, they also ask us to provide them evidence of whether we've achieved the stuff we've achieved, and they independently verify the performance measure that we have set ourselves. That is as far as it goes on the first goal, which is the simplicity, clarity, and the relevance of message. So we are making that commitment, and we would like members, when they look through our strategic plan, to analyze and critique what we say, so that if there's some feedback and some input that members would like to give, we can at least take it on board and make sure that we respond to some of your expectations as we go through the preparations for implementing the strategic plan next year. On the visibility of our leadership, this is the part of our program as an office. After we've done all the technical stuff that I talked about in the first bullet, this is when we unleash our people and send them in all directions to go and talk to some of the decision makers, so that as we evaluate the outcomes of the audits in the various institutions that we audit, we do not come across a situation where people in leadership in the institutions that we audit turn around and say, I didn't know this was what you were expecting us to do. That's what this goal is about. It's about getting to every department, every municipality, and every department in a province, talking about audit issues, talking about the commitments that the leadership has made in respect of what they will do on these audits. And this visibility is really standing on the pillar of our own people making themselves available, and also understanding what is it that needs to be done to strengthen our hand and to also ensure that we move closer to fulfilling our mandate. We have developed many partnerships and strategic relationships with various players within the system of government, whether it is the Association of Public Accounts Committee. We are always visible and talking to them and sharing with them our insights on what are the pertinent issues with respect to the audit work that we do. We are constantly in touch with the likes of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts in the National Parliament, as well as the portfolio committees. As I said, since the beginning of this week, going into next week, and of course I think last week as well, our teams have been in and out of Parliament helping clarify some of the issues that we know about based on the audit work that we've done in these annual reports. So these are the key stakeholders, and we believe that if all of those people take some of the institutions that have a large concentration of irregular, unauthorized and wasteful expenditures. If that intensification of the regular interaction on a quarterly basis is acted upon, there's a greater chance that gradually over time, these that are characterized as systemic weaknesses in our system of government might get a better chance of being addressed on a consistent basis. So that's what this is about. It's a little bit of activism on our part to make sure that we do not sit behind the desk and write long stories about what we saw without engaging the people that are supposed to act on it. I'm done with this one, that's why I was summarizing it. So I'm going to move to the funding one now. I just wanted to give a sense of the high-level issue around it. On the funding one, Chair, I will finish at 10. Okay. I've got 10 minutes to go now, so I will be done at 10. On the funding part, as I said, I'm sure maybe let me just leave the bullets and just talk to the funding as I see it. Mm. One of the things in this area of funding is the ability of our office to continuously control costs, to make sure that the cost of auditing to government is continuing to be affordable. How we test that? We develop tariffs that are used as a charge per hour, which we believe are affordable in the sense that they are always below what you get in a typical audit firm in the private sector. Because our infrastructure as an office, as it spreads around all 9 provinces as well as nationally, we have tested it over time that with the kind of funding model that we have approved, we can sustain our activities. The only glitch comes when we have to be paid. And I think we've highlighted that. And it's largely concentrated within municipalities. National departments and predominantly provinces and public entities do not really have a major challenge paying our fees, but we know that from a sector point of view, this one is largely within the municipalities. And we would like to urge the committee also perhaps to pick that up. And I know that in the 2 previous engagements that we had when we spoke about the general report for the MFMA, mm-hmm. there was a discussion about it. And we still have to come back to the committee to give them the analysis that they requested for us to do. As AG also clarified at the last engagement when we presented our annual report, we do what we do without the intention to make profit, because we will rest if we can cover the costs of doing this work and be able to recover them from the fees that we raise. And that's why in terms of our target for the net surplus, it is something that we believe ought to be in the single digits. Whether 2 is high in relation to whatever else, the point of the matter is that we want to keep our net surplus in the single digits. When we did an analysis of our funding model at the time we made the submission, it was clear to us that somewhere up to 4% overall is a typical net surplus that we might target for. And this is really to enable us to make sure that we've got sufficient money available to invest in things like technology, to invest in things like improving our human resources, to invest in other new areas of focus. For example, performance auditing is a new area of focus. When it starts, it doesn't pay for itself. We need to put money in order for us to be able to pay for it. So the net surplus that we are putting here is a very reasonable number, we believe, and we think that with all the effort that we've always put into what we do, we've now mastered the art of at least predicting what the fee income is going to be on an annual basis. As far as the area of creditors, which is our commitment to pay on time, that's the timing that we are committing to, that at least the bulk of the people that we owe money, which is predominantly the audit firms that deliver these audits on our behalf, we want to be able to pay them any time up to 45 days. So we're not saying we're going to pay them on day 45, but if there are delays from being able to pay them at least at 30 or 32 days or whatever, we must not exceed 45 days. That's the target that we are setting ourselves. Because there's a lot of administrative problems that come with meeting these commitments. So we believe that 45 days, as we have done previously, is what we can achieve. These are in the area of debt collection. We've stratified the different provinces because we believe that different provinces are stronger than others, and so we're putting targets that are different for each of the category of provinces based on historical experience. If you look at the bottom one, for example, just to give a sense of that, if one looks at the total debt that the office is owed by the municipalities, it's largely concentrated in the area like Northwest, Free State, Northern Cape, and Eastern Cape. And that's why our target for collecting of debt is a bit lower for those provinces because of historical experience. Whereas the likes of the Gauteng and Western Cape and national departments predominantly are on the high side in terms of their experience of paying us on time. That's the funding one, Chair. Strengthening human resources. And this one, again, I think I'm going to cut to the chase on this as well, because it's our people. It's all those 2,700 people in the office that we must look after, so that they don't see the reason to think that the grass is greener on the other side. So we are putting a lot of initiatives in this one, and I think a lot of them we've spoken about before. And we really are focusing on developing our own talent, so that we believe that it is much cheaper to retain talent and to produce people with the level of experience that we provide over time, because then it eliminates recruitment costs, it eliminates inefficiencies for training new people, and it also eliminates the risk of getting people who may not fit with what we're trying to do and they decide to go in a very short space of time. So you will see also in terms of the submission of our surplus request for utilization of the surplus, there's a lot of effort that we're putting into the strengthening of the human resource area. This will also be measured, and when it gets measured, it will be assessed independently by the audit firm that audits us. And the last goal that we chase as an office is that of leading by example. We believe that anything that we do that lacks in quality will not sit well with us. If there's anything that we do and it's done without consideration to the timeliness of its delivery, it is something that we will be paying particular attention to as an office. We have a robust and strong risk management discipline in the office, and a lot of the oversight around the work that we do internally from leading by example is also overseen by our audit committee. And we think that for us to continue to do the work that we do in terms of the commitments that we are making under the first and the second goal, we want to be seen to be an office that operates in an environment that is clean. Human as we are, we sometimes slip up on one or two issues. We accept it, but at least those issues should not be of such significance that they could lead to us being qualified. So this is what we are committing to, saying that we are going to deliver, as we have done, clean audits as an audit office ourselves, so that nobody questions our ability to look after our own affairs when we expect other people to do so. So I'll leave it at that, Chair. Maybe this is now the point for me to pause, and the rest we will take via questions.
Welcome, AG. Do you have any other remarks that you want to make?
Not really, Chair, other than perhaps to, as we look at the issues, to just take note of the fact that it will be important to cast our eyes on the tariffs that SCOWEP needs to apply its mind to, as well as the audit directive, which will be the basis on which our audit focus will be guided, both ourselves as well as the firms that do work on our behalf, as well as firms that audit in the rest of the public service. entities that we don't audit. So I think those documents would be also critically important for our attention as we go forward. And if we need to provide some insight to those, we can also maybe comment briefly on them. Yeah.
Members, it's open for questions and comments.
Thank you, Chief. What I want to understand is, I think several times you've presented to us the fact that departments owe you, and there's a problem of getting that back, and you've clearly indicated that some of the provinces are less of a pleasure to focus on, but have you seen any improvement, or is there an indication of a closing of gap in the amount last indicated to us that is being owed to the AG? Then, Chair, my other problem is, the other question is, how related or how closely is your interaction with Treasury, National Treasury, in terms of the ICT developments, just to get an indication as to whether there is a close of gap once again in the developments of the IFMS processes? Because I think that if we don't get that right as well, we could be facing further challenges in getting proper regulation, especially when it goes down to local municipalities. We know that there's the IFMS system that is being improved or changed through the Public Service and Administration, but the issue is now how coordinated is that work to yourselves? Then, okay, also noting the budgeting tool that you indicated, is that now part of the PeopleSoft ERP, is that now also related or being aligned to the very IFMS processes? I think that's all for now, Chair. Just to get an indication of whether there is a close of gap, at least in being proactive, as we've indicated earlier, and being proactive, especially in areas of the municipality. Otherwise, then we won't be seeing where we're going to. We're moving to in terms of correcting our audits, especially in local government.
Honourable Speaker.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies in advance, because I've not read the full document from the Secretary General, and it was a bit difficult for me to follow the presentation, especially because I'm an alternate member in this committee, so I've missed most of the engagements with the Secretary General. So I will ask the constituents a question. The Deputy AG, in his input, mentioned that in the coming years they want to focus on the use of consultants by departments for institutions, especially in areas where there are people who are employed specifically to do the work of those consultants. I just want to get how prevalent is that behavior in provincial departments as well as the national departments, and if you have interacted with that previously, do you see any improvements in terms of changing the attitude of departments in the utilization of consultants? If not, what are the exact plans that you will be engaging with departments in addressing that? Thank you.
Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to start with the last and move backwards. Prevalence of consultants, we have already started this performance audit. It's a work in progress, but very close to being completed. I'm not yet clear exactly what the key findings are, but I can assure honourable member that there are a number of findings that we have picked up in this area, which will also be followed by recommendations that we will make. So I think once we've had an opportunity to table that report, stage, I might speculate in terms of the detail, but I think we can give assurance that that project, in terms of doing the performance audit web consulting services, is close to completion. And we'll find its way into Parliament, I'm sure, within 3 to 6 months from now. The budget tool that we talked about is clearly the tool that we as an office want to activate as part of the packages that are in PeopleSoft. We haven't done any work to assess it in terms of alignment to the IFMS process. So this is really just a tool that will get us to do budgeting better over a period of time. So we just flip this one to say it's an initiative internally that we need to put in place. But I guess when there are implications for what this integrated financial management system will do, we will take some lessons from the IFMS process, but we are not necessarily positioning ourselves to bring it into the IFMS alignment process immediately, because that which National Treasury is developing from an IFMS point of view is predominantly focused on the integrated financial management of government departments. Because when National Treasury will issue chart of accounts and issue instructions on how financial management will have to happen in government, we tend to be outside of that constituency that they will give those instructions to. Interactions with National Treasury, we have regular meetings with National Treasury almost every quarter and sometimes more frequently. And these interactions are predominantly because National Treasury sets the rules for financial management and accounting, and we are there to audit to the rules that they have set. So there's a lot of regular interactions, particularly with the Office of the Accountant General. We interact also with the people who look after financial management of local government. The people who are driving the IFMS project, we interact with them. All meetings that happen, we are always part of those processes so that we can be able to highlight potential audit issues that might arise as they develop and gear up for this IFMS process. So there's a very strong working relationship that spans a number of years. Hence, when we come to Parliament, sometimes we will come together to engage certain issues that we've worked with them commonly. On the debt collection and progress in respect of it, there's no evidence of much progress. The bulk of, if we look at our analysis that we did now when we presented the annual report, the picture looks at a high level, looks pretty much the same. There hasn't been any major drive to pay those outstanding debts. And that's among others the reason also that they've advanced was to say, we don't have the money. And I guess the question is, they haven't made an effort to request it from anybody. But there are some provinces, I know, for example, in the Free State where there was a concentration of some of this debt. The province took a few that will assist, as well as the Eastern Cape has done it. So where we get that old outstanding debt coming in, it will probably be one big lump sum payment just to relieve the old debt. But there hasn't been a huge change from the last time that we reported on it.
Thank you,
Ryan. Yes.
If I can just add some of the comments on the IFMS as well. The more specific one we are talking about to Treasury when we meet on this matter. Firstly, IFMS rollout is done by a different office, which is an IT project office. What in our meeting with the Accountant General we have impressed upon is the need for the Accountant General and the Accounting Standards Board to act as a quality control assurer that makes sure that when this system is finally switched on, it responds to the accrual accounting and cash accounting requirements that they have prescribed in terms of the standards. Because we did feel that role was not played a lot more intensely, and now that gap has been closed. The only thing that's remaining, obviously, is that of making sure that the project is speeded up. But even the Audit Committee of Treasury has intervened and they're watching this project a lot more closer. So there is a lot more oversight over it. than has been in the past. With regard to municipal systems, there hasn't been a decision to roll IFMS out to local government, but there is also an intention to review the existing systems that are prevalent in local government and choose the ones that are most appropriate for the various layers of municipalities, starting from low capacity to high capacity. But predominantly, the ones that need best assisted is the medium to low capacity, because they do use a different system, some working, some not working, some dependent heavily on external consultants to come in every month to assist in the production of reports. So there is that exercise that Treasury is also coordinating as well. Yeah, thanks very much.
Chair, the reason why I was raising this is that I think perhaps it could also be one of the highlight areas in terms of reducing consultants in departments. But if this IFMS thing is not keeping up in terms of progress, then are you really going to achieve your goal of saying that there will be improved performance in terms of your audit reports? And I think, Chair, in terms of the cluster, the governance cluster, with a special attention to public service and administration and national treasury equally so, we might have to come up with strategies ourselves to, as committees, to actually apply pressure on this IFMS thing, because it does seem as though it does stall a lot of work in terms of progress, and it's slow movement, or the slow pace of progress has been extending for over 5 years now. I think it's more than 5 years already. And without that, the system's coming right. We are continuously going to experience problems, especially in supply chain management issues and HRM, which are a continuous challenge. So I doubt if there'll be a significant improvement for the very Auditor General's work in terms of clean audits. Thank you, Chair.
No, I think you're raising a valid point, because I've heard about the FIMS while I was still a member of the Portfolio Committee of Finance some years ago. And I just read also in one publication over the weekend that there are serious problems around the IFMS. Maybe it would be worthwhile for us to interact with the Portfolio Committee on Finance and maybe the one on Public Service and Administration, just to understand what are the complexities around these issues. I think we are almost done. DAG, as you have indicated, would want to digest this report and still interact further and deal with some other outstanding matters in our next meetings, especially on the audit directives and the tariff, so that when we adopt this thing, we should do it comprehensively. I just want to take, if there are no further comments, then I would want to take this opportunity to thank you for your attendance and for the office of the AG to come and brief us on such an important matter. But take into consideration that we still want to engage in our further meetings on this matter. Or Bigani, you want to say something?
No, Chair, I just wanted to add that with specific attention to the very IFMS issue that we are requesting, that perhaps the coordination...
Sorry?
That perhaps there be something coordinated,
yeah,
at an any possible convenience between as a cluster with the Auditor General, so that this issue of IFMS can actually be put to a rest eventually, or implementation process, a smooth implementation process, that we ourselves as a committee commit ourselves to that.
Okay.
Thanks.
DAG?
Thanks, Chair. Just two issues. There are two issues now that are work in progress in the ends of the committee in relation to the work we've just done now, the statutory work. And that is the annual report process. We still have to reach a finality on that. And there's now the strategic plan. And when I look at our diary internally, it looks like the earliest we can interact with the committee in this fashion, because of many commitments that myself and AG are starting to get into now, between now and the middle of November. It looks like we possibly gonna be available in the last week of November, just if the committee can take note of that.
Yeah.
So that when you plan your internal digesting of this material, you at least have in mind that we can only now meet either in the third or the last week of November. So that's practically our aid, our internally. And then the other one, Chair,
before you proceed, does it bring any complications on your work?
Not really.
Not really.
Because all of this is for the year starting in April, and the annual report is stuff that's already happened. It just requires that the committee must do its own work to make the necessary decisions that it has to make.
Yeah, no, you wanted to make a further point.
Yeah. Then the further point is my logistical point, Chair, and I mean, I'm raising this thing without having tested it also with the AG. And I hope that the members will take it as it is. As far as the logistics of the engagements with the committee, is there any possibility, because this is a Friday committee, and we are alerted to the fact that Fridays are a challenge, you know. And the challenge of a Friday is predominantly driven around the flights and the connecting flights from Gowar Town. And we were thinking that why would it not be easy then? Because I'm sure if I look at the membership of the committee, predominantly there's probably two people that live in Cape Town. And if we have a meeting on Friday, would it not help perhaps to have it at Gowar Town in the morning of Friday at the airport? So that we come from our office in Pretoria, you would have traveled the night before from here to Gowar Tambo,
mm-hmm.
and connecting flights to the regional areas like Limpopo, Mpumalanga, it's right there at Gowar Tambo. So you don't have to spare another 4 hours of trying to get to Gowar Tambo. Because the reality then is this meeting ends up getting done at an hour and 15 minutes after it started. Whereas if it started at Gowar Tambo at 8:30, the chances are that we can have it for 4 hours. Because there's nobody who will be battling with trying to figure out. Even those that would have traveled from here who live in Cape Town, as soon as the meeting is done, can get onto the flight back to Cape Town. That kind of logistics. I just thought I'll suggest it so that the ex-co of the committee can look at it as a dispensation that we can put in place. Because our meetings are not regular either. But when we have them, it might be mutually beneficial if they can at least stretch and deal with all of the issues without anyone feeling the pressure to leave the meeting before it is 2 hours in the book. I just thought I'll put that
out. That's a very constructive proposal. I'd have to discuss that with the chairperson. And I agree with you. I mean, that's quite sensible for us to take that approach. Or else we have to get permission from Parliament to be sitting when Parliament is in session. I mean, the House in the afternoon. That's the other alternative, but you're right. The Friday meeting presents serious problem for us in terms of quorum. We have to go around and try to call members who are not essentially belonging to this committee, and we don't end up having a meaningful engagement. So I've discussed that with the chairperson and present the proposal to you. But thank you for the suggestion. I think it's a valid suggestion. And the concerns are valid. I think we need to be seen to be paying much attention to this work and giving it the seriousness it deserves. Thank you, members. We will meet again when we are informed by the chairperson. Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
to do